This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The Levine Museum of the New South recently opened a showcase that puts a spotlight on the local LGBTQ community in Charlotte. The show is, in fact, several exhibits that tells the story of the city's gay, lesbian, and transgender communities. Now, this may be the first time that a museum in North Carolina has broached the topic of gay history. Janine Bryant joins me now from our sister station, WFAE, in Charlotte. Janine is Vice President of Education and Programs at the Levine Museum. Janine, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Tell us where the idea for this exhibit came from.
The idea for this was actually more than 2 years ago in the making. We were broached by a historian with the template for an exhibit program that would look really deeply at the history of gay Charlotte. And at the time, we had lots of ambition and ideas, but not a lot of resources. So although we had a good skeleton of an idea, we actually had to basically shelf the idea until we stumbled upon some other people in the community who were doing some of this work.
Anyway, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what does that mean, gay history? What histories and stories are you looking for?
So back then, we knew that many people in the Charlotte community were doing their own work, basically being community historians and capturing these stories on their own oral histories, artifacts, and trying to document a long, long history that existed in Charlotte. Fast forward to 2014, we realized that we had a golden opportunity to introduce our LGBTQ Perspectives on Equality exhibition suite in conjunction with the Destination Freedom Project, which is a 2-year exploration of civil rights and human rights then and now.
Well, Josh Burford and Bob Barrett are two people who helped create the exhibit at the Levine. Josh is an archivist and assistant director for sexual gender diversity and gender diversity, I should say, at UNC Charlotte. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks, Frank.
Bob Barrett is an activist and professor emeritus at UNC Charlotte. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Frank.
Josh, let me start with you. You actually created a timeline. We're talking about sort of how we create these histories. And Janine says, well, you know, there are people in the community who have been doing this on their own. And then you created a timeline that's featured at the Levine. Can you tell us about that and how you put it together?
So my goal was to try to encapsulate as much of gay, lesbian, bi, trans, and queer history as possible. And so about a year ago, we started collecting Charlotte's local queer history through the Charlotte LGBT Community Archive at UNC Charlotte. And so what I did was I started with the sort of easy-to-find history, community groups, nonprofits, and then I allowed them to point me towards the history that might be more difficult to find. And so we created a network of local activists, community members, business owners, and we started pulling the history together. And so the timeline isn't a direct extension of the material that we have found so far in our collecting efforts at UNC Charlotte.
And Bob Barrett, your hate mail is some of what is on, some of what's featured in these exhibits. Tell me the story behind that.
Well, the hate mail probably stands out as more important than it really was. Back in the early 90s, I got worked up because the local newspaper presented our community in such a negative light. And so I began what turned out to be a very successful effort to educate the people at the newspaper about who we really were. And that led to me writing some op-ed pieces and a story about me in the newspaper. And following that, each one of those would be hate mail coming from different sources, people saying what a terrible person I am and how my life should end, and they hope I get AIDS. And one of them really was just awful in what he or she wrote. And at the end of it, he said something like, well, if you're not careful, satin is going to get you.
Mm.
And so
was a double T in there?
I was really worried about satin.
I can imagine that. Yeah, that's a fate worse than dust. But let me ask you, Bob, we shouldn't be taking this lightly. On the other hand, these are horrible threats, which I guess underscores the need to educate, certainly starting with the institutions so that people have a different idea and a more robust idea about the very diversity among these communities. And Bob, you actually, before these op-eds, were counseling HIV and cancer patients, right? Tell us a bit about those experiences.
Well, I think both cancer and HIV people, cancer not so much so, carries a kind of stigma about it, and often people around them are uncomfortable or back away. And certainly the people with HIV initially, particularly, did not get very good service. The medical profession was afraid of them. Patients would be in the hospital and the attendants wouldn't bring their meals into the room. There would be great complaint about medical care being spent on people with HIV who were going to die anyway. So it was a pretty awful time, and the support came out of the GLBTQ community to say, we've got to create organizations that are going to help take care of these people and lobby on their behalf. And that happened across the country. It happened here. It happened up in the Triangle as well, that organizations got created. And we really had to start teaching the public that we weren't who we were presented to be. And once we could put a face on HIV or even a face on the LGBTQ community, people began to see us as their brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers and aunts and uncles, and the ability to relate to who we are as human beings began to override the negative stereotype that had been promoted.
And then part of your effort as well was to work with the police, among other institutions, to do that very thing. Tell us about that and your ride-alongs.
Well, this policeman contacted me shortly after one of the stories in the paper and wanted me to tell him about being gay, and he wouldn't let me come down to the police station. He said he was coming to my house. I was very apprehensive about what is this guy up to, and generally, the community had not been treated well by law enforcement. But when he came, he was a very good listener, and he truly wanted to understand. And that conversation with him led to subsequent meetings with the chief of police and other people in the police department. And one of the issues was the way police were entrapping men in public parks who were there to have sex, which is something that's just absolutely wrong. But maybe the entrapment and the subsequent embarrassment by publication in the media was equally wrong. So I did ride with a policeman once just to see what they saw going on in the parks. It was very, very interesting, eye-opening, really.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, we went into one park, and we rode around that park for about 3 hours. And there was one person who was moving in his car the entire 3 hours in this circle, clearly looking for someone to pick up, to have sex with. And so they set up the entrapment, and the entrapment failed because the person didn't make a move towards the undercover policeman. And so that was going to be the end of it, and I said to this policeman I was with, well, I think it'd be a good idea to stop him and just let him know how close he came. Well, he was a little reluctant to do it, but he did, not in the best fashion, but he did say to this person, we think we know what you're here for, and this is not appropriate. And I'm pretty confident that person didn't go back. But, you know, that's such a little part of the story. The bigger part of the story is about people gaining some sense of confidence about themselves as human beings, mm-hmm. and stepping over their fear and shame and being able to live comfortably in their communities.
Well, and that can't happen as long as the community has a wrong idea, misguided ideas about who those communities are. And Josh, that's what you found, I guess. And I understand it. What got you started as an archivist? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, when I came out in the early 90s, the very first thing I wanted to have access to was the history of my community. Like, who had come before me? What had they been like? What had they done? Because I was, you know, coming out in the early 90s, there was a lot of radical activism happening, and I wanted to participate, but I wanted to know how and why we were doing what we were doing. And so I went to school specifically to try to figure out how to locate this history. And so I started teaching LGBT history in 2006. And as I was telling Bob earlier, to packed out classes of students who are also really hungry. And so this project for me is about collecting and preserving, but it's also about giving back to the community a sense of who it is. Because without our history, we don't know what we can do, much less what we have done. And that's a really important thing to give back, along with a sense of pride and safety, is what we've done. And I think as Southerners, especially queer Southerners, there's this sense that we don't really exist, that we're always escaping and going to other places. And what I've discovered working on this project is that's just not true, that we stayed and we worked and we've done the work because it's the South and not in spite of the fact that we live in the South.
And Janine Bryant, that seems to be at least one of the goals of the exhibit or the exhibits at the Levine. Tell us about the particular exhibits in this show.
We thought it was very important, just to piggyback off what Josh was saying, to create a frame with the national perspective. So we have Out of the Shadows, Gay America, Kinsey to Stonewall. Then we wanted to move further into the regional perspective. And so that's where we began to have the conversation about Pauli Murray, Imp, Crusader, Priest, Dude. Then we wanted to, of course, incorporate Josh's work in the UNCC's archive. And so we had publicly identified coming out activists in the Queen City. And last, we wanted people to have a personal experience with this. And so the last exhibit is called Minding the T's and Q's, Gender Identity. And that's where local artists explore their interpretations of gender identity through visual cues and use of space. But it also gives other people the opportunity to interact with their proximity and their gender norms.
Well, take us through these one at a time. Out of the Shadows, Kinsey to Stonewall. Tell us about that, because that, as I understand it, was an exhibit that had been mounted but never shown. Maybe you can give us the history of that, Janine.
Certainly. That panel exhibition comes out of Stonewall Library and Archives. And as Josh was saying, this is a fairly new archive, and they didn't necessarily have the audience for the work that they were doing. But they've been working very studiously to create a history that would talk about kind of post-World War II America and the space between that and the Stonewall riots in New York City in 1969. In doing that, they were collecting images. They were collecting stories of events. They were trying to create a storyline of the gay rights movement that was born out of the start of the civil rights movement, but also some of the early stories of the feminist movement. And from that, we have a great exhibit experience that kind of takes you through the images that are associated with it. And it's done in a way that honors the stories of people from a national perspective. And certainly the stories that are not often told before 1969, before when people started really paying attention.
Well, tell us about that movement, Josh. Certainly we can collect narratives and personal histories, but as a movement, how do you see the narrative flowing, and what are the gaps? What is it that we don't pay enough attention to in that history?
Well, I think the biggest gap in the history is bisexual and transgender history, because bisexual identity is almost always rendered invisible in our culture because we insist on defaulting the orientation to the partner of the individual, right? So if I'm a bisexual identified man and I'm with a woman, then I'm always straight. And so bisexual history is rendered invisible in a lot of ways. Trans history is understudied and underappreciated because the trans community itself has been fighting so hard just for the basic recognitions of their identity and their worth that it's been hard to collect it. And so what I've noticed in our own history here is that I was able to find some bisexual and trans history, but not as much as I'd hoped. And I think this is true going all the way back. I mean, the earliest American history that we're really studying is the 1920s. We have some history from the Civil War, but even that's really understudied. But if you look at the trends in the history, that very early history, that 1860 to 1865 history, is a lot of that is trans history. And we just don't see that because I think the larger community really understands how, like you said, how diverse our community is. And because of that, trans folk and bisexual identified folks are often overlooked.
And underrepresented, particularly in the official documentation. So I'm wondering where the research comes from. We know that to try to find out the contributions of women in this country a century or two ago, we had to go to diaries and letters because they're not in the official documentation. Is the same true in LGBT communities and histories? Josh, I'll stay with you.
It absolutely is. I mean, what we find is we go back to family members. We go back to friends of friends. We go back to like those undercover stories that we told each other for years to try to track it. And so we are finding letters and diaries. We're finding some cases like minuscule photos of people. And so going back to that primary documentation, that's why archives are so important, because it's in the archive itself that we can actually nuance out the complexity of the history. And so when we find something, it's so extraordinary. I mean, the earliest trans history that we have on the timeline is from the 1970s. And finding that history came through the work of a community activist who was friends with someone who had been in Charlotte. And so we're literally working the grassroots networks to try to find where the history exists.
Bob Barrett, how important is it to you? I mean, as somebody who took a step toward activism by yourself and endured hate mail and probably worse, what does it mean to you to see this exhibit now publicly displayed in Charlotte?
Well, there's two levels of it. One is, I think so many people today, particularly younger GLBTQ people, really don't know what that history was about and how challenging it was even 25 years ago to live as an out gay person. So I think it sensitizes them to the fact that things really are better today and life is easier, but it's happened because people were willing to stand up and to try to make attitudes change. On the other hand, I think it's really, really helpful for people, both gay and non-gay, to realize there is a history here, and it's a rich history, and it goes back much further than we can document, primarily because people were so afraid and ashamed that they didn't step forward and hold on to the documents that might create some of that history. So I think it really does validate us as a community. It invites people who are not in our community to come and try to understand us better. And it really creates a wonderful energy within the GLBTQ community that, look, we're valuable enough to be here in this museum.
GLBTQ communities and perspectives on equality, the subject on the state of things. Talking with a group of people who were instrumental in putting together that exhibit in Charlotte. Janine, it is up and running now. What kind of response are you getting?
The response thus far has been very positive. We actually made preparation for both positive and not quite so positive interpretations of the exhibit. But thus far, we've only had one person consistently protesting the exhibition, and we've invited him inside to actually have a look at the four exhibits included in the suite so that he can actually share some of the perspectives.
I'm guessing, given the difficulty of putting this material together, you're probably being contacted by other museums who are now interested in doing the same thing?
Indeed, we are. And because we spent about 2.5 years looking for, Stonewall Library and Archives in Florida, the Pauli Murray Project, the Elsewhere Project out of Durham, El Perez, who curated Minding the T's and Q's. We've been looking and kind of mining for a while. And as we've done this, the momentum in the community has been tremendous. And the response from the community is such that we're literally getting phone calls daily about people who want to partner, do programs, offer dialogue, take tours. So we've been really excited about that.
Josh Burford, again, for you as an archivist, how important is it to see this exhibit now in Charlotte?
It's more than I expected, having only really started working on this project, myself as the archive, a year ago. And seeing it in the museum, to me, it's a different kind of thrilling, I think, than what Bob is talking about. Because at the opening exhibit, for me, looking at this history as an outsider, inviting people to come in, putting it up on the wall, it was kind of overwhelming, the response that I've gotten personally from this exhibit of people coming up and saying things to me like, I never thought I would live long enough to see my history in the museum like the Levine. And the enormity of what it means to be part of a team that is preserving this history, it was overwhelming in a way that I wasn't expecting. And so I'm thrilled to be a part of this. And as Janine said, the support that we've gotten from other archives around the country has been through the roof. I've gotten phone calls from all over the country, people saying, congratulations, what can we do to work together? How can we pull this together? It's awesome.
It's great to talk with all of you. Thanks so much for being on the program. Josh Burford, an archivist and the Assistant Director for Sexual and Gender Diversity at UNC Charlotte. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you so much.
Janine Bryant is Vice President of Education and Programs at the Levine Museum of the New South in Charlotte. Thank you, Janine.
It's open until January 25th.
All right. And you can see pictures, by the way, at our website, stateofthings.org, to see some of what's going on down there at the Levine. Bob Barrett, activist professor emeritus at UNC Charlotte and a psychologist in private practice. Thank you, Bob.
Thank y'all.
And thank you for listening. There is more ahead on the State of Things. Author Scott Blumenthal talks about his debut novel. Stay tuned.